Okay, we are going to now move into the church of Sardis, and it's going to be in Revelation chapter 3. And let me ask you this quick question before we jump in, because here's a basic premise that I want you to get out. If you are called to be against something, so let's say the Bible advocates Christians to be against any form of abortion. Okay, so be it. Does that mean that it's okay for you to join hands with Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses or even Muslims for that sake to join forces with them to come against the practice of abortion? Would you say you could do that? Not do that?
In what sense?
As far as, I don't know, let's go down and the corner with the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Muslims, and let's hold hands there, pray, and then we hand up signs in front of the Planned Parenthood place and we picket them.
No, they don't pray to the same God we do.
Okay, so that would be a clear no, right?
You may not know.
Wouldn't there be a chance to outreach?
You don't know that you're holding hands with them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Take a poll.
Unless he's wearing, you know, like a Muslim hat or something like that, you would obviously, okay, something's going on here. Okay, you wouldn't do that. Would you contribute to an organization that takes contributions from Muslims, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and then you're contributing also to that, to this organization, who's supposed to be non-partial, and that organization fights against abortion? Would you give to that organization?
Well, wouldn't that be like it said, God's in the face, it's not in the coin. So
we do every day.
Yeah, whether it's Pets or McDonald's, wherever it may be, they do that. And so you're saying a two-part question, whether we do it knowingly out in front or do we do it subversively financially?
Yeah, yeah.
As long as there is no religious affiliation, I would feel comfortable doing that. The minute they tack on the religious affiliation,
yeah.
Islam or any other religion,
yeah, for instance, Shriners. Don't you guys want to help children in get wheelchairs?
Yeah. Not through them.
Is that what I'm hearing? Why? What's wrong with the Shriners? They just wear fez hats and a little tassel. It's like the Grand Poobah, right? From the Flintstones, right? Yeah. The Order of the Water Buffaloes. You remember that? Every time I think about the Masons, I just think water buffaloes. Would you say, well, they come to your door and they say, look, you want to help children in wheelchairs, don't you? They're paralyzed. You would want to help them, right? So give to our organization and we'll help them, and we'll have the potato bowl at BC and all this other stuff. And
I swear allegiance to Allah. You can't do it.
So you wouldn't do it?
No.
You wouldn't give to little kids in a wheelchair? You wouldn't give to kids in a wheelchair because they're water buffalo people.
They've got chairs. They can sit down.
I think if you give with your heart, unknowingly in certain situations, that's one thing. God knows.
Yeah, that's one thing. I understand that.
If you purposely know that it's going to support certain organizations, you probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah, I think it's a good axiom to have, is that these organizations, like the Shriners or whatever it is, whatever organization you want to make up, United Way, whatever, you must be careful of where your money is going to, because they might be fighting the same causes that we are fighting, but we have nothing in common with them other than what they're fighting.
Sounds like a government.
Does that make sense? So I want you to understand this concept, because it would apply to what we're going to study, and it's a concept I want you to stay with, because many Christians compromise on this. Just because someone shares a like cause doesn't mean you get in cahoots with them. Doesn't mean you get in fellowship with them. What does Jesus have with Belial, is what Paul would say.
You can avoid a lot of that just by your tithes to your local church.
Yeah, yeah. And you could do that and make sure that money is being handled correctly.
Right.
That's absolutely. But it could not necessarily even mean money. It could mean a jogathon, a walkathon, or this, that. And there's a lot of good things, organizations out there, but you must understand who is the primary sponsor of the jogathon or the walkathon. If it pops up and you see the Scottish Rite jogathon, and this is to help muscular dystrophy, You think, well, it's helping muscular dystrophy and all that. I guess it sounds good. And you go to the draw. It's a Scottish rite. It's Masonic.
We always have to remember as Christians that our primary reason for being here on this earth is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And second to that would be to do humanitarian things.
Right. Exactly.
This is the problem with the emerging church that they have is they've begun to put the humanitarian in front of the gospel.
That's right. And becomes ends up being social gospel. They end up never sharing the gospel. Many of us are upset with the government and what they're doing. Okay. And you would say, it's out of control and we need to rein the government back in. But does that mean, just because you don't like the government and you disagree with the practices of the government, that you can unite with a militiaman who's strapping on bullets and stuff like that, you know, in Idaho? No. That doesn't mean that you can get in alliance with that guy just because you both don't like the government.
Well, Christ gave us that example.
Mm-hmm.
You should do.
Right. Well, I mean,
they thought he'd lead a great army against
right.
the Romans, and that's not what it was about.
Right, exactly. I saw a hand back there.
Yes, what is St. Jude's? Who is that?
Catholic.
Okay, so what if your child is receiving help there and you feel like you should give money at that point?
I mean, should you?
Well, if you're taken to a hospital, what do you do to St. Jude's?
I mean, most of the hospitals you go to now are either Adventist or Catholic anyway. So if you're giving to any hospitals, typically because of those organizations. Baptists used to do hospitals, and we still have a lot of hospitals out, but we've gotten out of that market, at least the Southern Baptists, and we're trying to. But you'll see a lot of hospitals are Catholic. Memorial, Mercy, downtown, Southwest, it's all Catholic. And then the San Joaquin is Adventist. So if you gave to those hospitals, would you be supporting Adventism? Or Catholicism, maybe.
All the doctors in the hospital aren't Catholic.
No, no.
Yeah, and God bless them if they've helped you. I mean,
yeah, if they helped you, I mean.
You want to go to the hospital, you know.
So. I mean, that's the kind of things that you guys have to decide what you should do. But there are some clear things that you must be careful of. And I think what you're going to learn today will shock you. Absolutely shock you about what happened with Sardis. It gets intricate in this one. It's a very small passage, but it gets very, very deep, quick, and very intricate when you start discovering history. Now, I will apologize to begin with. In order for you to understand Sardis, you must understand the history of the church age at this time. And it's going to whack you out. I'm just going to tell you right up front. It's going to whack you out. You're going to think, I didn't know this. I'm a little upset about this. And it sickens me to my stomach. But then you will understand why the course of history did what it did at that time and how we get to today. Let's first read the passage, and then we'll exegete it and try to make sense out of it. Revelation chapter 3. And we're going to read in verse 1. Now check this out. And to the angel of the church of Sardis write, these things say he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. That was identified in the chapter 1 as the churches and the spirit of the churches, right? Seven stars are the seven church spirits of God, or seven angels of the churches, right? So he's talking about, I am the one who's controlling the true church. That you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain, that are ready to die. For I have not found your works perfect before God. Remember, therefore, how you have received and heard. Hold fast and repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I come upon you. Underline in your text, come upon you as a thief. Do you remember that phrase? Okay, hold on to it. You have a few names, even in Sardis, who have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He observes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life. But I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. As I have been explaining, these churches are literal historical churches, but they also represent an epoch of time during the church age that you and I live in, where this church is predominantly on the scene. This church, Sardis, means those who are escaping. Escaping what? Is the question you got to ask. Escaping what? The name means those who are escaping, to escape. Let's do some, these are pictures from last week. Now I didn't replace them. Sorry. Destination, Sardis, those are escaping. It represents the age roughly between 1517 and about 1648. 1648 is the signing of the Peace of Westphalia. And I'll explain that a little bit. Give or take. Some guys take it up into the 1700s. Some take it up to 1750. So it's generally speaking, but the Peace of Westphalia is after a 30-year war between the Catholics and the Protestants. Protestants were given equal status. At this point, Protestantism is allowed to function equally with Roman Catholicism. So that's why some people will mark this. What's 1517? It's this. It's Martin Luther and the Reformation, of him nailing the 95 thesis on Wittenberg's door, of saying all the 95 things that he didn't like about the Catholic Church. This starts what we call the Reformation. Okay? So that's why this time period signals 1517 to 1648. Okay. It's still Roman Catholicism, but now the Reformation is now starting to happen with Martin Luther and a lot of other people, Calvin, Zwingli, many of these people. Did you notice in the text, it says that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. There is no commendation for this church. Did you notice that? He has nothing good to say about it. What is he talking about? This is why you and I are sitting here in a Baptist church, so to speak, and not in a Roman Catholic church today, because of the Reformation. But Christ says about the whole period, you have the appearance of being alive, but you are dead. Your works are not complete in the sight of my God. What happened? This would seem that Christ would commend that this happened. Fantastic. You broke away from the whore, the Jezebel church. You broke away. You did great. I commend you for that. I would expect that. But in this passage, there is no commendation for what they have done. And the question that you and I have to answer is, why? Why does he have nothing good to say about the Reformation at all? Does that shock you? It shocks me. If this church represents the Reformation, wasn't that a good thing that Martin Luther and his reformers said justification by faith? You and I hold that doctrine, yes? You're not trying to work your way into heaven. That's what we went. They went back to what the Bible said. What does the Bible say about salvation? Justification by faith, not by works. The Roman Catholic had justification by works. Reformers come in saying that's not what Paul taught. That's not what Jesus taught. That's not what the Bible taught. It's by faith alone. Faith alone that you get saved. And you and I are a byproduct of that, because that's exactly how you got saved, is by faith alone. So we're a byproduct of this, of getting back to this. The Catholics had messed it up, and I showed you last week. They had introduced Mariology, sacraments, junk like that, of earning your salvation or keeping, maintaining your salvation, baptism, all that stuff. And yet this church, the church that is responsible for getting back to what true salvation is, has no commendation from Christ. Whoa! That shocks me. So we have to ask, what in the world happened? Why doesn't he have anything good to say? Yes, Dave.
Luther and Calvin were basically usurpers in and of themselves. All they were trying to do was usurp the authority of the church of the day.
Yes.
They weren't so much as interested in salvation by grace or by faith as they were in the power that they could achieve by usurping the church.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. What you will notice, folks, is that our reformers weren't the best of people. Calvin would have killed you and me. Zwingli would have killed you and me. Probably Luther would have killed you as well. Why? You got to remember, you want to see what Luther believed, look at Lutheranism. Infant baptism, if you would have not baptized your baby, off goes your head. The Anabaptists, which were the forerunners of us, Zwingli took them out there in the river in a frozen lake, and he told this one old boy, he said, look, you're going to practice baptism by adults? I'll baptize you. They took him out to a frozen river, and they drowned him as his mother watched him. There, we've baptized you. You want to be a citizen of our country or our city? You must baptize your infant, and if you're not, we'll kill you. So that's where the Anabaptists came from, the term rebaptizers. But that's, so we're sitting here, and Luther would have killed you. So would have Calvin. So would have Zwingli. They would have killed you straight out. And you think, what would have given them the right to kill me? There's one thing they didn't do, and one thing they knew, and it's exactly what David's pointing out, the power structure. They never divorced the church from the state. Therefore, these leaders who assumed power became the heads of the state many times. Therefore, they could exercise, anytime you messed up, exercise church discipline on you and kill you. So if you were in Scotland, you were a Presbyterian. If you deviated away from Presbyterianism, they killed you. If you were in England, if you deviated away from Anglicanism, they would kill you. If you were in France, it was Catholic, they would have killed you. If you were in Holland, Sweden, Norway, if you were deviated from Zwingli or Calvin, he would have killed you. They just replaced the Catholic Pope by making themselves the popes. You catching that? That's basically what it ended up happening. That's a nutshell. But let me give you the particulars about this. This is why Christ has nothing good to say about the Reformation. Wow. The Reformation and Protestantism, and I want you to understand the two aspects of it. The Reformation is what happened with Luther and all those guys in the 1517s and on up. And then what you have for the rest of the period of time is called Protestantism. We're an outgrowth of Protestantism, but Protestantism is not commended even by Christ himself. Catholicism is not commended, and neither is Protestantism. Isn't that interesting? Why? Let's go with the history and Sardis. In history in Sardis, I want you to see this, and you'll see this in the text, makes sense. This is why the name is called Sardis. The first thing is King Cyrus of Persia conquered Sardis in a surprise attack. Those who escaped said that Cyrus came as a thief in the night and caught the city unprepared. Now here's an interesting thing about this. Cyrus, according to Isaiah, is a type of the Messiah. He prefigures Christ. So this all played into the church of Sardis because as he attacked, that's where the term came from, those who escaped, Sardis, from Cyrus. And they all said he came as a thief in the night. What does the text say? How has Christ come? He's using their history to understand. Now, he's already used this term, thief in the night, but he is using this history in connection with him, that if you don't get right, I will come to you as Cyrus did, as a thief in the night. Let's stop right there. What is he suggesting? What is this event? What is the event he's suggesting? Another attack? Rapture. He is threatening this church, Protestantism. And if you don't get yourselves right, I will come as a thief in the night. And the term thief in the night always applies to unbelievers, not believers. Paul said, I would not count you as unaware. So the thief in the night is only for unbelievers. And he's basically saying, threatening them, that if you continue in this aspect, I will come to you and I'll leave you behind. Mainline today, Protestantism is dead. I'm sorry to say, but mainline Protestantism is part of the liberal church. We are not part of the mainline denomination. I hope you understand that. I hope the term for you, you understand, is you're called fundamentalists, that you're called born-again evangelicals. But to call yourselves a mainline denomination means that you're in lump with these guys. Dave.
In chapter 3, verse 2, the King James reads to be watchful, but in the Greek it says to wake up.
Yes. Yes.
Further down it says wake up and repent.
That's right.
We know that it's talking to unbelievers.
It is. And this is what you must understand about the whole seven churches, is Christ is talking to those who are true believers and fake believers. The wheat and the tares are being talked to. At this point, he is now discussing things with unbelieving people who think they're Christians. In Luther's time, Zwingli, Calvin's time, the way you became a member of the church was that you were born into the city. Were baptized as a baby, and that automatically made you a citizen of the city or the state or the country and made you a member of the church. Take a guess of what happened to the church because of that. You have a bunch of Northern believers.
Well, it's like people that think just they're born in America, I'm a Christian.
Right. It's the same mentality. So history keeps repeating itself. Mainline denominations today baptize infants, yes? These Christians think that by baptizing that infant, or they say I was baptized as a child, that automatically places them in the community of faith. What they do not realize is that they do not have a relationship with Christ, period. They are dead.
These state churches of Europe.
Yes, absolutely. And Europe's the quintessential example of this, the Anglican Church. The Episcopalians here are the break-off, the American version of the Anglican Church. America was very fortunate in God's providence. And our founders realizing we must have a separation of church and state. Now I hope you understand what they meant by separation of church. It doesn't mean that the church cannot influence the state. It's that they didn't want the church, like the Anglican Church, running the government, or vice versa, because all these people were pagans, so they didn't want them to be able to do that. So today, our judges misinterpret this, obviously, and you understand that they're misinterpreting and say, well, they can't have no mention of God at all. That's not what our guys were talking about. Our founding fathers were not talking about that at all. They were saying, we don't want the Catholic Church, we don't want the Anglican Church running the show. So if you go to Europe today, all the Brits will tell you they're from the Anglican Church. Why? That's the state church. Their children were baptized there, and they're not believers. They wouldn't have a clue as to what and who Christ is, but they're just part of the church, and that makes them a citizen of Britain.
I lived in Spain for 2 years and had a number of friends there, and they were all the same way. They thought they were Catholic.
Yeah.
They believe. They said, I'm Catholic. But mm-hmm. When you talk about beliefs, they had no idea.
No idea.
They didn't know anything about what they believed.
Isn't that scary?
But they believed that they were, it was almost like an ethnicity.
Yeah.
You know, they're just born that way.
And so if you guys ever go to Europe, that's how it is. But folks, don't fool yourself. That's how it is here in America with mainline denominations. People grew up Methodist and they think, well, I was a Methodist and now I'm saved. I grew up Presbyterian and now I'm saved. I was baptized as a baby or whatever. Or I grew up Catholic, folks. I thought I was saved. I was lost as a ball in high weeds. Christ would have came to me and said, you're dead. I don't know who you are. You don't know me. You're dead. How Protestantism is looked at by the Lord. So you must understand the difference between the Reformation, a breaking away from the Catholic Church, and then the rest of the period being emphasized by Protestant. Because the history event, this first historical information right here, is a symbol for the Reformation. They escaped, they got out of there, and they did it by themselves. It represents Martin Luther breaking away from by himself without any help. And the other reforms, more than Martin Luther. Look at the second thing that happened in Sardis's history. 17 years after Christ was born, Sardis was devastated by an earthquake. Those who escaped returned later to rebuild the city through the kind assistance of the Emperor Tiberius. What did that history tell you? That they had help from a governmental agency to rebuild the city of Sardis. This historical event symbolizes the second epoch of Sardis as far as Protestantism. Because what you will notice is Protestantism, when it started, immediately joined forces with the kings and monarchs and lords and then secret societies to get its movement off the ground. They just traded one pope for another. And instead of calling him the pope, they just called him the King of England, the King of Scotland, the King of whatever, the King of Sweden. That's all they did. They just transferred ownership from a pope. And this is the most devastating aspect of it. They joined up with secret societies who hated the Catholic Church to help fund their movement to get them off the ground. Whoa. Look at this. Matthew 13 is the parable that goes in line with this church. Look what Jesus said. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, for which a man found and hid. And for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Simple parable. What does it mean? How does it relate to the Church of Sardis? The Church of Sardis is trying to have world peace through governmental agencies using the church. Okay. How do we interpret this parable in regards to that thought?
They won't find it.
They will not find universal peace. Protestantism or Catholicism won't find universal peace. Basically, Christ is saying, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to join the Christian church to Robert the Bruce or whatever on his line, or whoever, and you think that's going to make Scotland peaceful or England peaceful. He goes, it doesn't work that way. Let me show you how this will happen, the only way it'll happen. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, okay, which a man found. Anytime you see a man in the parables, it's referring to Jesus. A man found it, and he hid it. Wait a second. A man came to a field, he unearthed it, saw what it was, and then he reburied it again to use later. Did I give you a hint? Has to do with world peace, governments, nations. Goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Bought the whole world. He died for the entire world, but in that world there's a treasure that he found and then he reburied again to use later. Come on. Come on, you're almost there. Has to do with getting world peace, a nation.
Yeah.
Close. And what is he doing with the nation in the tribulation? What nation? The treasure is Israel. He found Israel. He reburied her. She's buried right now. He's talking to the church age about, you want to see really how God will have a theocracy on land. He goes, you can't do a theocracy right now. I'm not on the planet. Don't try to have government and the state and the church together. I didn't form it that way. The way I formed it is I will use one particular nation for world peace, and it'll be governed under me, and that nation is the nation of Israel, who are now hidden in the field. I will bring her out eventually, and I will have world peace when I use the nation of Israel in the millennium, is the idea behind this. This is a message to the church, so don't even attempt it. Don't think you're going to get world peace. You won't.
This time period also lays the groundwork for the next time period when Christ does bring Israel out.
That's right. Absolutely.
Because Luther hated the Jews.
He hated the Jews.
So he instilled that in the Germanic people.
Yes.
Which will lead to the ability that Hitler had to
yes,
the Germans so easily.
Absolutely. But Hitler used the writings of Martin Luther and many of the reformers to encourage the Christian Germans to hate the Jews and want to kill them. You're like, oh my land, what is going on here?
My uncle tells me that he remembers that he had German relatives in Germany at the time that Hitler was rising to power that were Christians. They were praying for his ascension to power.
Yeah, can you believe that?
This tells you how easily they were swayed.
It's bad.
And these were not people that were just professing Christians.
Yep.
These were
really oh, yeah.
Christian people.
And so look how misguided they were. Now, how do I know that Israel's the treasure? Very simple, from the Old Testament. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure unto me above all people. There's the word treasure. Israel is always the treasure. For the Lord hath chosen Jacob unto himself for his peculiar or special treasure. So Jesus is assuming that you understand anytime he mentions treasure, it refers to Jacob or Israel. So if you go back, the kingdom of heaven is like Israel in a field, which I found and hid. And for joy over, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. So he bought the whole world so he could get Israel, because eventually the message behind it is one day we will have peace, guys, but not through the church. It will be through Messiah ruling through Israel on the planet during the millennium. And that is his message to the church. So the idea is, do not try to attempt to have a government takeover by Christianity and think that you will Christianize the entire planet. Think about the eschatology behind that. If you think you're going to make peace over the entire planet, what kind of eschatology do you get? Post-millennialism. Millennialism. These are heretical views of the end times because of this misunderstanding of this parable. It's the idea. Postmillennialism or amillennialism believes that humans, or Christians in particular, will usher in world peace, and then that will bring Jesus back. Roman Catholicism teaches that. Most Protestant mainline denominations teach that, and it is false. You and I are not going to usher in peace. It just doesn't happen. Only Christ will bring it. So if someone asks you, will you think there will ever be world peace? Yes, when Christ comes back, he's the only one that can make that happen. We can't. Now, you and I work as peacemakers, but peacemakers between people and God. But to work towards one nation of peace, and guess where this line of thought takes you? If you think humans can bring world peace, where does the line of thought take you? Global community, global government, global currency, and a one world leader.
And who might that be?
I wonder who. Holy mackerel, do you see the insidiousness of what crept into the church, even into the reformers, of the idea that I'm going to bring world peace without Christ? Oh my land, it leads you to the very opposite of Christ. It leads you to the Antichrist in a one world system, one world government. Because that is the only way. That's what the Roman Catholic Church tried to do in the Middle Ages under the Pope. That's why many of the reformers thought he was the Antichrist, because of the one world leader trying to have one world government and one world currency.
Is that why the Catholic Church now is like aligning itself with Obama and all
they're becoming very political and very ecumenical. They're the only religion that has its own UN representatives and the only ones that other countries send ambassadors to. Wait a second, you're supposed to be a religion, not a political entity, but they turned into a political entity. Stuart.
I think it's in Isaiah where it says that the government will be upon his shoulders.
That's right.
And is that one of the scriptures that they use saying, the government will be part of.
Well, when you spiritualize it, yes, because you have to spiritualize that text, because we honestly see that thing as literal, is that when he comes back, Christ will rule the government of the entire planet.
That's the messianic.
That's the messianic age, or the millennium.
That's when the government will.
But they take it upon, well, he's ruling now from David's throne, and he's ruling through us. And you're like, no, that's not what Isaiah 9 says. It says that he will do it, not us. And so they take that. Of course, the Catholics allegorize that. And so any mainline Protestant allegorizes it and say, no, we're going to do it. And we're going to try to reach the world for Christ.
Because we are.
Because we are the body.
Yeah, the body.
And we'll do it. And you think, we've had 2,000 years of this nonsense. Quit thinking that. You're not going to do it. But what it is the spirit of Antichrist that will entrap mainline denominations and entrap the Roman Catholic Church to hook up with the whore of Babylon. That makes sense. I told you it's going to go crazy in it. It's deep.
I'm a Christian. Recently, my friend got a spam mayor. According to that mayor, they want to. Him like a chip. If he got chip out there and checked his DNA.
Yes.
So, but my friend doesn't know about that.
No.
So do you think it's the mark of Revelation?
Yeah. I think what it is it's not the mark of the beast until Antichrist initiates it. But what you see is the technology is here for him to use that.
Well, I'm shocked because
sure.
Except the mayor.
Yeah. I mean, what's happening once you get out of America, and even in America, but mostly if you go in Europe or other places, they're already on the beat as far as getting chips already. They think that's fantastic because it'll eliminate cash, so it eliminates what's money under the table, eliminates all mob types of crimes and stuff like that. They think it's not going to. The mob will still find a way. But it's there. People are doing it in their dogs now. So what we see is the technology be able to cause people to buy or sell without a mark is there. It will not be the mark of the beast until Antichrist puts it into effect. But that's how close we are.
Well, look at these earthquakes that are happening all over the world.
Birth pains.
Yeah.
What is the deal about birth pains, ladies? They get closer and they get more intense, yes? That's what I hear. I never have experienced it, obviously. So what? Yeah, I know, huh? So what you should start seeing is, yes, more frequent earthquakes and bigger earthquakes. And I'm going to tell you what, they're already thinking California's going to get nailed here pretty soon. We're due for one, man. So make sure you have your supplies, by the way.
I don't know if anybody watched this. We never watch the show, but we hardly ever watch live TV. We happened to watch America's Most Wanted last night.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
All right, so we're watching it, right? And the host of America's Most Wanted, because it's the 1,000th show, just happened to catch that one.
Yeah, because that's been on for years.
Right, it's the 1,000th show last night, and he got to interview President Obama on the show. And one of the things that they discussed was Obama's plans that I'd never heard before to create a new deal where anybody who gets arrested, as soon as they get arrested, they get DNA sampled.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my land.
As you get arrested, it's just like a fingerprint or whatever.
They're going to do DNA.
You keep the sample.
Wow.
So that, and of course they were talking about that in the vein of, this will really help catch people who are.
Sure. It's always a good thing.
Most wanted, because as soon as we get a DNA sample, we can match them to the database of all the DNA samples we have on unsolved mysteries and that sort of thing.
That idea was actually introduced during the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah. So now they're finally doing it.
Actually, I think she was asleep.
That is happening right now.
That's interesting.
Go ahead, Scott.
In prison right now,
they're doing DNA.
Every inmate is swabbed DNA.
DNA.
But there's a difference between that and when on arrest.
When arrest, yeah.
Because you're not guilty when you get arrested. And
I see. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, you're not guilty. I mean, somebody could just say, arrest them.
You could be accused and not guilty.
Yeah. You could be accused, you get arrested, boom, DNA sample.
Let's go, Darren, and then we'll come back here. Lisa.
You know what, Brian? I kind of struggle with the microchip technology issue. And this is the only reason I think differently of it. Even right now, I think a third of the world doesn't have consistent electricity or electricity at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the tribulation, there's going to be just these, unprecedented disasters.
Yeah.
Look at how it disrupts Chile, the earthquakes in Haiti, and how the technology, even if we had it and we had electricity, would be down or unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Waleed said that.
Yeah.
The marks on your hand or on your forehead. The hand represents what you do. The forehead represents what you think. So if you do the Antichrist work, if you believe in the Antichrist with your mind, then you can purchase. And there may still be a physical mark of what that is.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No, it just seems.
It doesn't have to be a chip.
It seems a Western kind of approach.
It is. I think it could be both. It could be. There is a visible mark. There is a visible mark, and whether that's a armband, what did Hitler try to do? This is exactly what the Muslims were trying to make him do when he talked to the Sheikh of Jerusalem. He told them, when you see the Jews, just put armbands on them, dude. And he goes, that's how you mark them out. And what did the Jews have to wear? Star of David on their arm, right? Well, that concept of identifying people with an outward visible sign is still reticent in the Middle East. And so, yes, it didn't have to be a chip. It could actually be a physical mark. It could be a tattoo. It could be a thing. We just know that you won't be able to buy or sell without this mark, whether it's a chip or a mark. Antichrist is going to use it, something. See, now, here's the funny thing. The reformers, the Catholic Church started doing markings. And the reformers started saying, that's the mark of the beast, dude. We can't buy or sell without the Catholic insignia on there. That's it, dude. There's no doubt about it. That's why they thought the Pope was the Antichrist for a period of time. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be a chip, necessarily. But some are equating that to it, but it doesn't necessarily have to be.
So then how can you interpret this thing, like when my kids are born, or get your kids fingerprinted? Is that setting into that? Or then now they see, you know, now I see advertisers, come get your child DNA. Is this just an onset to this? You know, where are the parents' greatest weaknesses outside the church? It's our kids.
Yeah.
So I think falling into something because we
will
be able to mark our, you know.
No, because, if we're believers, we're taken out of this. So we that where if it's technology or the mindset or the we'll be gone. We won't have to be there. And God gives two warnings about this before it happens.
Well, I mean, you see all this. It's just like the insurance companies now for your health insurance.
Uh-huh.
We're going to give you a $30 gift card. And I did this. Now I'm starting to think about it. Well, they set me up for now. I can't get insurance in the future because we know what you can't do. Is this just a?
Well, I think what you're seeing
to try and get you to do A's because they or get you to do B because they want you to really do A.
I think the bottom line behind it is that the spirit of Antichrist is working to get control of all humanity, because the Antichrist must get control of all humanity, and before Antichrist comes on scene, a world government must get control of all humanity, and then it breaks off into 10 leagues. So what you're seeing, whether it's insurance, medical, money, it doesn't make a difference. A movement of trying to control every aspect of Bill's life is now happening, and like never before. And that is to work towards this one world government.
What they're doing is they're using fear
to do it.
Willingly come into these things.
Absolutely. I mean, they're going to say, you don't want any lost children, do you, Brandon? No. Well, if we put chips in it, or whatever markings or DNA, we'll never lose another child. You wouldn't fight against that, would you?
Well, you see that now in education, because they're telling. I've gone back to special ed this year, and they're saying we're no longer teaching kids. We're teaching for the lawyers. We got to do it with the lawyers, and that's the exact words that come out of my director's mouth. We're teaching the lawyers. There's so much paperwork that it's not about the kid anymore. It's about covering our backside so we don't get lawsuits. And they're not teaching.
No.
It's to protect the child.
Yeah, that's the public school systems are having a problem right now.
The scary thing about DNA is who has the power and control over all this DNA once it's been cataloged, and what can they can move it around to threaten you?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds crazy, but
they could
frame you if you do this or else.
Well, think about this. By 2015, all medical records are supposed to be on one data system. 2015, and every doctor is supposed to use it. If a doctor doesn't use it, he's going to be chastised. And and the patients they send to him, he won't get paid for. Whether it's Medi-Cal, Cal or Medicare or whatever, he won't get paid for. And they're saying, look, we're all in the government take here if they pass, you know, universal health care or whatever. And they're going to say, you won't get paid, and plus we'll take your license away if you don't treat how we want you to treat. And so you go there and you need a kidney transplant. They're going to use a chart instead of you personally with a doctor in charge. Okay, he's this old. What does the chart say? Oh, no kidney. We just put him on dialysis. He's got 5 years to live. We'll make him comfortable. That's how they start treating you. And if you buck the system, well, we won't give you care. Just get out of here. And then you'll be waiting, you know, for a heart transplant or a heart stent for a year, like they do in Canada or Britain, and you're going to die before they give you the stent. Because you're sitting there waiting to get your free health care. And it's crazy, but they could threaten you like that. There's no doubt about it. And really, who's going to get the medical treatment? Only the young. Because only the young matter, because they can work. They're good little worker bees. That's every communist system under the planet. What's the you can't have a system like we have now with communism. It doesn't work. You can't have a whole baby boomer generation not working and getting free medical care. Because guess what Hitler did? We can't have this. What did he do? He said, you know what? You have a grandma and grandpa. We'll take care of them for you. We'll relieve your burden. We have a wonderful place called Shady Acres. And we take grandma there, and she will be so happy. We feed her the best food, and oh, it's just wonderful. Roses and gardens, and oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, look at our wonderful trifold brochure. And they take grandma away. Don't worry about it. You guys just keep working. You're fine. And grandma gets a cap in the back of her head. That's exactly what Hitler did. He took them away. The first thing he took, and he told the Europeans, the Germans, we'll relieve your burden. So we'll take the elderly away. And he killed them all. He gassed them. People didn't know where their grandparents went. Where'd they go? Well, we took them to Shady Acres, but they never came out of Shady Acres. It's like Hotel California. You can check in, but you ain't checking out. It's that kind of idea, man. You ain't coming back from that. And then the next thing, they had pictures of these deformed people like this. I mean, they were all jacked up in a cartoonish figure. And they're saying, it's not right that he lives like this. And they said in German, have mercy on him. And that's all the picture would say. And it has this guy all jacked up. And you think, have mercy on him. What does that mean? Well, it meant that we'll take the retarded people away because they're such a medical expense. And they gassed them. They were the first two people to go before the Jews. Then they got the Jews, the gypsies, things like that. But yeah, and so think about this. That ain't too far off of what people are trying to think now.
How they do it, they marginalize. They make fun of the old, they make fun of retarded, they make fun of the Christians, and then all of a sudden, well, if they marginalize you and make you less than who they are.
Human, less than human.
Then it's okay to just get rid of it because
they're a burden on society. You're a burden on society if we have to continue to give you diabetes treatment. So therefore, they're going to say, you're going to go pound Big Macs. We're going to tax that. You don't go pound Big Macs.
They're going after the fat man for sure.
They're going after all the fast food restaurants and say, look, if I want right now, I'm hungry, and if I want to go have a Big Mac, bless God, I'll go have a Big Mac or an In-N-Out. 3x3. I usually get a 3x3, and I'll pound that sucker, and it's delicious. I know it's not good for me, but it's phenomenal. But I ain't having anyone telling me I can't pound a 3x3. I ain't having anyone tell me because if you do, well, Brandon, it's not going to cost $1.75. It's going to cost $5 because we're going to tax that.
If you don't think that we haven't begun to marginalize humanity here in the U.S., we have because it's called abortion.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing right off the bat. And then you follow that up with the elderly, where they're going to practice a soft euthanasia, where, well, we're just going to make grandma comfortable. And what that means eventually is what they're doing in Oregon, give grandma a little pill, and you'll go right to sleep. Yeah, and it'll kill her.
So that's what they've been doing with medicine. So the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. They tell doctors, you don't need that procedure. Somebody dies, they sue the doctor. So the next time the doctors go, I'm going to get the other procedure. And now the government's saying, see, they're doing extra procedures they don't need. But it's no longer, everybody's trying to cover themselves because it's not about what's best or what's right. It's about what the government thinks, like you were saying, you need to do.
Yeah. Let me end on this because I got to stop. And we're not done with SARS because I'm going to tell you what, it gets deeper than what you thought. It gets worse. Because next week I'm going to go into the secret societies that were produced in the Reformation that actually funded and helped the reformers break away the Catholic Church. And when you see this, you're going to make you sick to the stomach. I'm going to just warn you, it's not a pretty picture, and this is why Christ does not commend it.
Can you bring us some of your sermon notes for that for next week?
Like typed out or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe.
I don't care.
Okay. Yeah, next week we're gonna do, after this we're gonna do 10 ways to be stress free, right? Now here's the deal. Bottom line, and this is where I want to bottom line this. Okay, two applications. First of all, Christ is saying in this parable, like the communists now are trying to have world peace, but their methodology is eventually to kill people. You see, their methodologies don't work to establish world peace. Christ saying, you ain't going to have world peace, so don't even attempt it until I come. That's number one. So what is our job? Is to get people, the peace we want to establish is the peace between people and God. That's what our mission is. Not to establish world peace between countries. That Christ will take care of that business. It's to establish between God and people, and that's your job to evangelize. Now, that's number one. Number two, what I hope you started seeing is the reformers just traded one pope for another, and they called him a king. And because they hated the Catholic Church so much, they were willing to ally themselves with people who were not Christians. In fact, next week you'll see with Satanists. They were willing to get in line with Satanists because both parties hated the Catholic Church. And you think, oh my land, are you kidding me? I ain't kidding you. Many of the funders who were rich Satanists were funding the reformers because the Satanists hated the Catholic Church. They're called Freemasons, Scottish Rite, York Rite, Rosicrucianians. And the reformers were hook, line, and sinker with them. Just because they had a common enemy. Bottom line this for us then. Be very, very careful who you align yourself up with when you have a common enemy. Because you might look next to you and there might be a Satanist standing next to you because you both hate the same thing or whatever. Be very careful because what that causes you, what you'll see what happened to the reformers, is they apostatized completely. To what you now have now is called mainline Protestantism, and that church, Christ said, is dead. They are dead. And it's because of that apostasy. They went with the Satanists. Whoa. Okay, next week, we'll see, finish the next second part of this lesson.
Hey, Brad, I missed a couple weeks ago. Where did I class? You haven't got the